This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Coach Jen in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Alice Jovich from Arlington, Texas. And you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January the 21st, episode 1343, brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, welcome back, Alice. Did you finish your bacon yet?
I finished my bacon, yes. Just in time.
Just in time. Yahoo!
I still have a little coffee. I wish I had more, but, you know.
Bacon and coffee. Now, did you have something with your bacon this morning?
Coffee.
Just bacon. Straight up bacon and coffee. Now, if that isn't a Texas breakfast, I don't know what is.
Well, usually I have eggs, too, but we were all running late this morning, so. Me and the dogs and the horses, we got things started late.
Well, welcome back again. As for those of you who are not familiar, Alice comes on every month on the third Thursday to chit chat about what's going on with the NATRC. And if you want to go back and listen to her other episodes, all you have to do is go to Horses in the Morning and type in NATRC in the search bar, and all of those episodes will come up. So, what have you been up to since we spoke with you last month?
I have been up to very little.
Very little.
Very well. No, and that's not true either, because it's like I've been doing very little horsey things, but I'm never without things to do.
You're
unfortunately.
A mom. You have lots to do. Yeah.
Yeah, I have lots to do. Since last month, we had Christmas, and it's the first year in a long time that I didn't do a lot of stuff for Christmas. I mean, I barely had a Christmas tree. My daughter made me buy a Christmas tree. We got a $30 Big Lots tree and some inexpensive blue and silver ornaments. So we had like this matching, you know, she did it all because that's like her thing. And we did a little tree and we had presents with each other. And we had a dinner with some of our friends and had presents with them. But on Christmas Day, it was like 80 degrees here. I mean, it was really warm. And so a couple friends came over and one of my friends has kids and we took them riding and I'm sure we cooked something. Oh yeah. I made cinnamon rolls. I always make cinnamon rolls on Christmas. And Maggie made lasagna for Christmas Eve and we tried to watch The Godfather, but we thought it was boring, which I know is sacrilege.
Wait a minute. Wait. The Godfather.
No, on Christmas night we watched The Godfather.
Still. It's a Wonderful Life, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Home Alone, The Godfather?
Yeah. Well, my friend who brought his kids over to ride is an actor, and he's been trying to get me caught up on all the movies that I should have seen because I like television a lot, but I tend not to watch a lot of movies because they're long and they require more than 42 minutes of attention. And so I've been trying to catch up.
You can just play it on double speed on that DVR. Yeah.
Exactly.
You watch No Time Flat.
But we got to like 2 hours and 7 minutes and I got to like where Sonny got killed or something. And then Michael came back. Anyway, I got 2 hours and 7 minutes in and we both looked at each other and we were like, we're tired. Let's go to bed. And I think it was only like 9 o'clock.
So you did not find The Godfather riveting, obviously.
It was not unentertaining. It didn't grip me.
No.
I like the music. I used to sing music when I was a kid. I had like the Speak Softly Love in one of my piano books as a kid.
Yeah.
And I had no idea about the movie, but I knew how to play that and sing that song. I drove my parents crazy with some of that music.
So we did this poll a little while back on the Hit'em Show. What movie is it that you will watch again and again and again? What there's always everybody has one movie that they will watch a million times over. What is it?
I have I have two or three, but like we watch White Christmas every year, which we had already done.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because I was a little worried about you.
No, we watched White Christmas. Yeah. We watched that earlier. There are two. There's one movie from 1984 called The American Dreamer, and it stars Tom Conti and Jo Beth Williams, and it's just a fun movie. It's about this lady who writes a story, and then she gets hit over the head and has amnesia and wakes up thinking she's the character she wrote about.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to look that one up, Glenn. Write that down.
American Dreamer. And then the other one is The Princess Bride.
Oh, you're one of the, yeah, you like the chick flicks.
But I also like, I love When Harry Met Sally. I watched that.
Oh, man.
I have so many, I have several, and Tootsie.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just so many.
Yeah. Well, we better. Glenn is probably feeling left out about now, so why don't we go to Glenn and see what's coming up on today's show?
Okay.
Hey, no, I'm just enjoying the day off, so that's fine. No problem. Hey, coming up on today's show, it's the North American Trail Ride Conference. Well, I don't even know why we're talking, because nobody from east of the Mississippi is even listening. They're all out buying bread and milk, you know, preparing the generators, getting the snow shovels out. And maybe they'll listen while they're shoveling. And we're thinking about all of you up in the Northeast. We talk spotted drafts today. We also talk about getting horses in shape for mountain riding and for some more serious riding than the plains of Texas. And we talk about the NATRC annual meeting, all coming up with Jennifer filling in for me co-hosting today. She's practicing in the captain's chair, Alice.
I know. That sounds awesome.
Which means I have to produce, which means we're all doing different things today. So we're going to see who screws up first. There's a pool going over in the auditor's room now.
Yes.
To see who screws up first today. So,
oh, yeah. There you go.
So if we hang up on...
I'm concentrating really hard.
If I hang up on Glenn, gee, it's just an accident. I did wrong button.
That's happened before.
So what's this I hear about your horse going over and getting some fancy smanchy therapy at the tail end of his brief winter vacation?
Oh, yeah. I gave Liberty a month off.
Now, Liberty is your number one
He's my number one squeeze.
Horse. Yeah.
Number one man, trail horse, extraordinaire. You know, we all have to have one, right? That our number one. Mm-hmm. So I took him last week on Wednesday to Cold River Equine. She's been a past sponsor of the show, Melissa Neal. She does a rehab at her facility. And for a lot of times people bring racehorses or lame horses or whatever into her place. And she has chiropractors and acupuncturists that come and visit. And this week was the chiropractor, and I just wanted to make sure he was all squared away and good to go, you know, for the next upcoming year. And I took him and my daughter's horse, Ollie. And while I was waiting for him to be seen by the chiropractor, we put him in the Aqua Tread, which is a pool that has a treadmill at the bottom. And it's really useful for helping the conditioning of the horse without stressing their joints, because the water helps to cushion, and the swimming part makes it harder, you know, it's more difficult, so they get in shape more quickly.
So this is the kind that, it's not like swimming where the water comes all the way up. This one, the water only comes up to like their chest or something, doesn't it?
Yes, okay. But Liberty's little, so it kind of comes up over his back. he needs to go in the kiddie pool. Yeah, he kind of needs, because he's only like 14.2 or 14.3. And then, you know, and this pool accommodates really big horses, because a lot of the people she sees are,
big old warm bloods. Yeah.
Yeah. And so thoroughbreds. Yeah. So she said he got a little tired toward the end. I mean, he did okay for a while, but you know, toward the last 2 or 3 minutes, he was struggling to keep up, because when he gets on the treadmill, he wants to like canter behind and trot in front because of the buoyancy of the water. I think he has it's hard. I've watched him. It was like, he has trouble coordinating everything sometimes, but, he got a clean bill of health from the chiropractor. They said that, you know, they were putting stuff back, that, you know, just like adjusting things and restoring movement, but that he didn't have any pain, which is nice, because when I used to weigh more, he had to get adjusted more often, and he had trouble with, you know, his back being out, and then he'd start bucking, and that wasn't fun for either one of us.
No, not at all. The bucking.
But yeah, he's in good shape. And plus now he's on 80 acres. So he probably, I mean, I don't know, when I see them, their heads are always down eating, but I mean, I do know they make the run back and forth from the pasture to the barn several times a day.
Well, I would suspect that if a horse has a lot of room like that, their hard wiring is going to kick in, and they're going to move around a lot more. And that's always good in my book. If they're just wandering about more than versus being on 1 or 2 acres, they might have plenty of grass to eat, but they're just not going to move around as much. They're just going to park themselves and eat.
Right, exactly. And like now they have a round bale because we had guests this weekend at the ranch where I live. So it's a trail riding facility. It's called Wood Rock Ranch. They're on Facebook.
Jealous, by the way. Jealous.
Yeah. It's awesome. I mean, there's 300 acres and there's lots of trails. There's about 10 miles of trail without trying to like make your own. But there's plenty. I mean, there's no official trail. You can go anywhere you want on
the
ranch.
Even more jealous.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I love it. And a bunch of people came out to ride this weekend. And so we put our horses that live in that pasture up so they wouldn't bother the guests. And I got them a round bale. And so now I noticed that because there's a round bale up in the big pen, they're spending more time at the barn eating round bale than they did. Well, yeah, but plus they had like a stockpiled pasture with 40 acres that had all coastal that we just let grow. And then, you know, she kept it closed off until it started getting cooler. Yeah. So they've got a ton of grass. I mean, there's 7 horses on 80 acres. They probably didn't need the round bale.
The smorgasbord is filled. Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, they are eating it, so they probably think they need it anyway.
So. Well, yeah, you know, given the opportunity, they want a variety, a little round bale, a little grass, a little round bale, a little grass. Sure.
Well, and then it was fun because all these ladies all came on Friday, and then we ate and rode and hung out and drank wine. And on Saturday, we went – there's 2 local restaurants in Bluffdale. Bluffdale is very small. I mean, if you were to look it up on the map or if you weren't to look it up on the map, you could, like – rub your eyes and drive right through. There's a post office, a Valero, and 2 restaurants and a few houses. It's awesome. I'm not, although take it back. There's a Family Dollar. Family Dollar is the most amazing company.
Yes.
But they came out. We had, there's a little restaurant there called Let's Eat, and he's only open 3 nights a week, and he has a rotating menu. And we all went there for dinner. He seats like 30 people 2 times a night, you know, 3 times a week. And so we made reservations so we could all get in, and it was just a lot of fun.
Oh, that's fun. That's so, life in a small town.
Right. And then some of the ladies played dominoes Sunday night, but I skipped out on the dominoes because I walked across the yard from the bunkhouse and went home. And then the next morning we all made breakfast together, and I jokingly told them I drove over here just to have breakfast. So I walked back across the compound.
Just for breakfast. Oh, that's very funny. Well, you know, we have a really fun product review to do today, but I see we have our first guest on the line already. Why don't we get on the phone with Annette and chat with her, and we'll do our product review afterwards.
Sure. Sounds good. Good morning, Annette. Are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Well, you were on the show in November about to take your draft horse Tally into open. And, you know, people were encouraging, and then other people were discouraging that draft horses really shouldn't do open. So we wanted to have you back on to hear how it went. So how did it go?
It was the most fun I've ever had competing.
Wow.
It was amazing. I can't quit smiling about it.
So what made you smile the most? I mean, what did she do that made you so happy?
She got to move. She got to be her big horse self and move out, move forward, keep going. We got to do a lot of, you know, changing gates and you know, some cantering. And it was just more than I could even imagine fun. The biggest thing was, you know, making sure that she was in condition, and she was ready to go. So I highly encourage it.
So was it all fun and games, or did you have any mishaps, or was she just perfect all day?
Okay, you would bring that part up, huh?
I had to bring it up. Yes.
No, it's pretty funny because I'm actually on my way to the orthopedic doctor right now. Yes, I did have one mishap. Things were going so well that I wasn't paying attention, and there was a switchback for the riders, and we're cantering along, and I'm looking left and looking right and just enjoying life, and some riders came cantering up over a rise, and at first it didn't bother Tally, but it startled me. And of course, you know, I spooked, pulled the reins. She's like, oh my gosh, something's bad. So she zigs and I zig. Then I overcorrected and she zagged and I zagged. And then I overcorrected and she zagged again and I zigged and off I came. So It was a long way down.
But yeah, how big is she again?
Luckily, no.
How big is she again?
What?
How big
she's
is
17,
she?
Oh, 17.1.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a long way down. However, there was a little cedar bush that I was able to steer myself into that helped break the fall. So it was all, you know, it was more like adrenaline, you know, and you're there and you're like, blink, blink. Okay, that works. Wiggle your nose, that works. Mouth works. Neck works. Shoulders work. And you just kind of work your way down and like, oh, I'm good. And you go to stand up and you go, oh, well, maybe not that part. So I just thought I had sprained my ankle and got back on the horse. We finished and everything. And when we got done, I was like, that kind of hurts a little bit. Come to find out I had broken my ankle. But, hey, it's all good. It's so worth it. But
so what's up with your ankle? How long are you having to stay out of the saddle?
Can I plead the fifth on that one?
In other words, her family doesn't know, so she's not going to tell anybody for fear they'll find out. That's what that is.
Exactly.
It's top secret.
You know, that's right. On a need-to-know basis, and nobody needs to know yet.
So especially your doctor.
The lesson here, Annette, is no lallygagging on the trail. Even when things are going swimmingly, you have to pay close attention.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's totally my fault because I was just enjoying life way too much at the canter when you're on a 7 and you're cantering, it's not slow, and it happens. So, had my helmet on.
Yay.
Always wear the helmet.
Yay.
So,
now when you
could have been worse.
When you were cantering along, were you cantering along with other horses, or were you by yourself at that point?
Actually, I was riding with one other horse and a little short Mustang, Spanish Mustang horse, and Moonshadow was a little bit in front of us and had already gone up and over the crest whenever all of this happened. So they didn't even know that I had come off.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to turn around and come back. And luckily, one of my good friends was in a group of new riders riding the slower ride. And we had kind of passed in front of them and had said hi and everything. And so she saw the whole thing happen, and Alice came up on it afterwards. So it was like a wreck family reunion.
Well, you know, when you think about it, at the holidays, the family always gets together. There's always that person. You were that person. Yeah. Now, was Tally a good girl and hung out and waited for you to climb back aboard, or did she continue down the trail and you had to go chasing her?
She went down the trail a little bit. Then I don't know if Teresa brought her back or if she came back. All I know is it was a split second and she was right there. And was kind of standing there waiting on me. And, you know, the adrenaline part, you know, starts to kick in and you're like, whoo. And then I started to get back on and I was like, I'm going to need some help getting back up on here. And then I was like, wait a second, I need to pee first. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's always better to pee while you're on the ground since it's a long way back up there. You don't want to have to get off and then realize it again.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, pardon me, everybody, but I got to go.
So did you give her a break after the ride, or you've been riding her to keep her in shape, or what are your plans for keeping her legged up for the new year?
Well, Actually, since I wasn't able to ride at all up until just recently, she has not done a whole lot. I just contacted a friend of mine who is going to leg her up and keep riding her every day for me during the month of February so that I don't have to overstress the ankle, so that I will be totally ready for our spring season. So luckily, Kate Love is going to ride her out there in Colleen for me and keep her legs up, because otherwise there's no way we'd be able to compete. She's got to stay in shape.
I guess that's not going to be a hardship for Kate, because everybody enjoys Tally and all the horses enjoy Kate. So it sounds like a win-win.
Yeah, in fact, Tally loves Kate so much that whenever we ride out at Terry Haynes Ranch and we come anywhere close to Kate's house, no matter what we're doing, Tally's like, "Oh, can we just veer over here and go and visit?" So, yeah, I don't think it's going to hurt Tally's feelings at all to be at Kate's house.
She can see her boyfriend. Her favorite horse at yes. Kate's house is this little bitty Mongolian horse named Kobe. And what is he, like 13 too?
He's tiny, but she is in love with him.
she likes those exotic fellas, huh?
Yeah. He likes those girls, those big girls, and she likes those little guys, and it's not a pretty sight, but, you know, they like it.
Well, thank you for coming on and telling us how it went, and hopefully the ride season will go well for you.
It's really, everyone is a competed novice with the freight move to open because, you know, the obstacles are harder and the distance is farther and all this. And these are the same things that I was worried about. I didn't really notice a difference at all in the obstacles. And the distance to me went by so much faster and was so much easier at the faster pace that, you know, it's like you need to start in open, and then when you get really good, you can move down to novice because it just flows so much better. And it was really very, very enjoyable. So I highly, highly recommend people trying this. And if you're afraid to move from novice to open, don't be afraid. Just do it.
That's right. Just do it. We're a bunch of us moved up this year. And we're all having fun.
Yes. So, thank you.
Well, thank you. Good luck at the orthopedic doctor.
Oh, yes. Can't wait. No, it's all good. It's all good.
Bye-bye, Annette.
We'll be back out there. All right. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
That whole broken ankle thing, that's just our little secret. Nobody else knows.
No, nobody else heard anything about that at all. No. I'm sure her doctor doesn't listen to the show, so we're okay.
Her doctor.
Or her mother.
Right.
Well, see, there was one time that we went camping, and the short version is that Annette used to have trouble with diabetes. And I didn't know it because I didn't know her very well. And she drank a Dr. Pepper and ate red velvet cake for my daughter's birthday and then crashed in a chair. When she woke up, she said something about her blood sugar being high. And I was like, "Do you have insulin?" And I'm like, "Is there someone I need to call?" And what she said was, "I don't care who you call, just don't call my mother."
That's pretty good. Isn't that a horse girl for you? You know?
Yeah. Well, she said, "I can call anybody, just don't call my mother."
I'm fine. Everything's good. Well, speaking of everything being good, tell me about this this rope halter that you seem to be all ready to gush about.
Oh my gosh.
I always thought a rope halter was a rope halter. It was a rope halter, but apparently not.
No. Okay. This rope halter is made by a company. She's on Facebook. Her business is called Naughty Pony.
Be careful when you Google that. Be very careful. Yeah.
No, don't Google it. Just go to Facebook. It's KNOTTY Pony. And it should not be confused with there's another company out there called The Naughty Pony, and she's a massage therapist. So this is just Naughty Pony. But it's also, the lady's name is Heather McHale, and she's the maker of custom rope halters. Annette and another friend of ours, Miston, went in for our group of friends and bought each of us custom rope halters and lead ropes as our Christmas presents this year. And it is the coolest halter. Mine was like multicolored with a turquoise wrap on the noseband and then a turquoise lead rope. And like my daughter's is green and black, I think. And somebody else's is, my friend Christine, hers is red. I don't know. It was a funny combination. I can't remember. It was red and something that, oh, red and teal, which I would never have thought to put together, but looks really good. And then these are also going to be our prizes for the ride that I manage in April. They're going to be our sweepstakes prizes, which is the highest horse score out of all the different classes. So like blue for an open, red for novice, and green for the competitive pleasure division. But they're just the nicest rope. And they have leads that match. She says she only uses the highest quality rope in her work, and they're custom so they can fit each horse's size or your colors. And I sent Glenn some photos so he can put them up on the page or, you know, include Facebook, them in the show notes. Yeah. So, she doesn't have a regular website. She only has a Facebook website, but she prefers to talk through Facebook, or you can email her. Her email will be in the show notes, but it's Mikhail. I can't even figure this out. It's Mikhail, and then it's like looks like Borgoats at yahoo.com.
Wow. Go to her Facebook page. Yeah, go to her Facebook page. That's a good idea.
Yeah, because she doesn't. She says it's too hard to do. So she'll try to. It's too hard to try to do talking about them over the phone, because it's easier to be able to send pictures back and forth and look at color samples and stuff.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense.
So, yeah. But I mean, it's just beautiful. Like, in fact, I like my rope halter so much that I keep it in the house so that it doesn't actually get left outside or get dusty in the barn. I actually have it hanging up.
It has made it to living in the house status. Yeah. That is some halter.
It is some halter. And it fits so nice, and the knots are really good. And she also does bitless bridles. So, cool. You know, like hackamore rope halter, rope hackamores. So
cool. Well, I encourage everybody who's interested in getting themselves the best knotted rope halter in the world, custom made for your pony so it fits his face perfectly and has the best colors around. Go to Knotty Horse Halter Company on Facebook. It's Knotty, Knotty Horse Halter Company. It's listed as a pet supply store on Facebook, and there's lots of cute pictures, and you can contact her via the Facebook page and check it all out.
Yes, that is right.
And it looks like, Glenn, boy, you're on the ball today. We have our next guest ready and waiting. No, we don't.
No, we don't.
I was wrong.
No, we don't.
She was there a second ago, but she's not there anymore.
I'm trying to text her. Where did she go?
I don't know. She went out to buy milk and bread for the storm.
Well, I don't think they have snow in Colorado yet.
I always thought Colorado had snow like 365 days a year.
Well, you know, it's the interesting thing about Denver, and because I've had other friends that live there, is that it'll snow one day and it'll be a ton of snow, but the ambient temperature is actually pretty warm. Like, it's kind of like here in Texas. I mean, like, it drops down and it'll snow because of all the moisture, but then it melts really fast. Because when we were there in November, they'd had a huge snowstorm like the week before, and there was still a little bit of snow left. But because I know that my other friend that lived there said that they didn't do a lot with the roads. They just waited for it to melt.
There you go. That's a Westerner for you. Just sit back and wait. It'll melt.
Well, because they drive and they go and they do stuff.
Oh, my God.
You know, and they just – everybody was so used to it, it was no big deal.
Huh. Well, how about that?
I know I met somebody, and I'm trying to remember who it was. I met somebody recently who's moved here from Minnesota, and they were laughing about, or they hadn't been through winter here yet. And I was like, just wait till there's the threat of ice and all the schools cancel. And they were like, are you kidding me? And I was like, no, I'm totally not kidding. If the weathermen are sure enough that it is going to rain, going to snow, then they will come, then they will just shut everything down as a precaution.
Just on general principles.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it is interesting because so many different parts of the country, and for somebody who grew up in the Northeast, the first time I moved south, and you hear about, oh, it's a threat of a half an inch of snow. Close the schools. You go, wow, what wimps. So the problem isn't that they're wimpy. It's that when you live somewhere that doesn't, if you don't have the machinery, the facilities, and the employees to clear the roads, you have to wait till it melts. You don't have any other choice.
Right, exactly.
It's not like you have an option. Yeah.
So, well, how about we do the list of things that people make mistakes on in the winter sometimes?
Well, while we're I'm going to check with Glenn because
finding
Glenn,
our guest.
Okay. Glenn looks like he's just about got our guest ready.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah. So, upcoming after our guest, we do have a list of things to do because we can't be riding frequently because of a snowstorm. So that's a little tease for everybody after we have a little chat with Kay, who should be coming up momentarily, hopefully.
Hopefully.
It's ringing. I see the little counter ringing. Yay, she's here.
Yay.
Oh, no, she's not.
No, she's not.
She's gone. Okay, let's do a list.
Okay. I was going to try to find the other phone number for my next guest, and maybe we can get her on the line with another number.
A little early. Yeah, there you go.
It's one of those days.
It's one of those days. Well, frequently in the wintertime, many parts of the country, and for that matter, many parts of the world, you're stuck mostly indoors because not only is it cold and rainy, so you don't want to rain, it's cold and rainy, you don't even want to be in the barn. So
right.
You have to come up with something either constructive or interesting or fun to do.
Right.
And I think somebody in your family had a suggestion there this morning, didn't they?
Yeah, well, he's a little friend. He's my friend that comes out to ride sometimes. And he told me that if you can't ride, because I was looking for a list of things to do when you can't be riding. And I found the other lists, but not one of those. So I decided I needed to make my own. And the three suggestions I was given by Harrison, who is 7 years old, was you should eat Lay's potato chips and drink cocoa, and what was the third one? There were three.
Oh, watch
drink
TV.
Drink cocoa. Watch TV.
Watch TV.
Yeah, watch TV.
I think it's interesting that it has to be Lay's potato chips.
No, he's very specific because last night or yesterday there were only Ruffles in the house, and he was very unhappy because I had not bought him Lay's potato chips.
Ruffles have ridges.
He doesn't like the ridges. He wants the Lay's. They have to be plain Lay's.
In the yellow bag.
In the yellow bag, yes.
Isn't that interesting?
So, and I know that I like to clean tack in the winter. Well,
yeah.
I don't like to clean tack, but I would rather clean tack in the winter than clean tack in the summer or, you know, when I could be riding. Like during nice weather, when you wanted to go out and ride.
Oh, the tack get grungy. Yeah, absolutely.
Then you're like, well, I don't want to clean it now because it's nice out. I want to go ride.
Right.
But like, you know, we use a lot of biothane tack. So cleaning tack has a whole new meaning when you have biothane and beta tack.
Well, see, that's something I actually miss because 95% of the tack I own now is synthetic because my tack lives outdoors in Florida where it molds 30 seconds after you've cleaned it. So I said, to heck with this. But I kind of miss cleaning the leather tack. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I kind of miss it. I used to love bringing it all in. You put it all into a muck tub. A clean muck tub.
Right.
And you bring it all into the house and you pour it out on the floor in front of Turner Classic Movie Channel. And you sit there all afternoon and clean tack. I used to love doing that.
Oh, yeah. I could see that. I can see where that would be a very relaxing thing to do.
Yeah. Because you're doing something constructive, right? So any adult or husband or wife can't be saying, well, you're just not doing it. If you just sit in the couch and watch a movie, that's slacking off and being lazy, right?
Absolutely.
But you're cleaning the tack, and that's altogether different.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And if you throw a little bit of the horse husband's tack in there with it, they're not going to say a word knowing that their stuff's going to get cleaned too.
Well, and I'm thinking too that like Scooter probably has a harness, and I'll bet cleaning harness is a whole lot more.
Oh my gosh.
Cleaning bridles and saddles.
Oh my gosh. And we're not very good about it. We have a really lovely Zilco biothane harness.
Oh, okay.
But we're not.
So you can throw it in the dishwasher.
We can throw it in the dishwasher because we're not very good. What you're supposed to do with those, as soon as you take it off the horse while it's still sweaty and sticky, you're supposed
right.
to hose it off. And the dirt just rinses right off of it. But we don't because where we untack the pony and where we can hose it off are 40 yards away. And heaven forbid, we're not going to walk that extra 40 yards with an armload of sweaty tack. We're not going to do that. So
right.
It's kind of gotten caked now. So it's gotten to that point where you really need to take a scrub brush to it. Yeah, and that's a lot of strapping. It takes longer to clean one pony harness than it does a regular and saddle, bridle, and girth for five horses. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it sucks. So rinse off your harness, people. Don't let it get crusty like we did.
Well, you know, and there's a book I read as a kid called there were two. There was one was called Summer Pony, and the other was called Winter Pony. And they were by Jean Slaughter Dottie. They were Scholastic Reader books. But I still have my original copies of these two books. They're in my collection of, you know, books that I would never get rid of from childhood.
Yeah.
And one of the parts of the story, my dog is talking to us.
Hi, doggy.
Bailey. One of the things that they did, one of the characters had I don't know. The story must have taken place in England because the girl got this pony. She rented him for the summer and he lived in her garage it was a girl and she lived in the garage, but she made friends from someone around the corner and they had horses that they drove. And so she learned how to drive and they had a whole big section about how to clean the harness and taking it off the horse and cleaning the harness every single time. But those people had a groom that did
it. Yes, that was definitely a story written in the UK.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that interesting that was part of the whole story? Cool.
But it was part of the story. And then, like in the second book, Winter Pony, they learned how to drive and they learned. It couldn't have been though, because they had a lot of snow and they don't get a lot of snow in the UK, do they?
I think the northern parts they.
Okay, because they talked about driving in the snow and having, you know, but like I imagined, I had this whole picture in my head of how this neighborhood was all set up, you know, like where the girl went to ride. And, but you know, that they drove the pony in the sleigh. Okay. So.
You know,
yeah.
This you'll have to look at the copyright on it because it could have been written during like the Gilded Age, in that it was an American author, but it was a time when families of a certain means, like Vanderbilts and the like,
right,
had
true.
Grooms that did everything. That could
it could have like taken place in the Northeast.
Yeah,
or
you have email me the title and the author. I'd love to look that up. It sounds fascinating. I love old horse books.
Yeah, but it's Jean Slaughter Dottie, and there was Summer Pony and Winter Pony. Those
check
are the
that
two.
Out. Yeah, that's cool. Well, we will continue the list of things that we like to be doing when we're not riding our horse, particularly in the wintertime. But let's take a little break for our song. We're going to listen to Sophia by Stephanie Quayle, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
Once upon a girl, not even 17, she said across the ocean, she's gonna give the world a chance to live up to her dreams. Wide-eyed like a child, she wanted to believe. But the world she thought would change her knelt before the way she thought the world ought to be. Sophia, can you stop the wheels from turning? Sophia, can you live just for the day? If I had all the answers, would you even stop to listen? You're walking in my footsteps, but your head is in the clouds today. Welcome to LA. They'll give you everything. And on the day that you believe you're everything I told you, but she didn't take the part. She said, I'll ride my own horn. They shook their heads and rode her off, but answered to the masters when her songs began to play. Sophia, can you stop the wheels from turning? Sophia, can you live just for the day? If I had all the answers, would you even stop to listen? You're walking in my footsteps, but your head is in the clouds today. I was born a color outside the lines, and I can see a lot of me in you. Not afraid of fire, not afraid to kill, not afraid to die, but not afraid to live. Sophia, can you stop the wheels from turning? Sophia, can you live just for the day? If I had all the answers, would you even stop to listen? You're walking in my footsteps, but your head is in the clouds. Sophia, Sophia, if I had all the answers, would you even stop to listen? You're walking in my footsteps, but your head is in the clouds. You're walking in my footsteps, but your head is in the clouds today.
And that was Stephanie Quayle with her song called Sophie, and you can Sophia, and you can find her music at stephaniequayle.com. Welcome back, Alice.
I'm back.
Woo!
I had to go do some recon on the weather.
Did you ever see, and you see these things all the time at tourist traps alongside of interstates, those little weather stations, and they usually have a piece of braided yarn stapled to the side of them, and it says, how to tell if it's raining.
No, I've never seen that.
And they would give this little tail of yarn that's attached to it a name. If the tail is wet, it's raining. If the tail is frozen, it's, you know, it's cold. It was really cute.
That's great.
Yeah. So we've been discussing.
Hey, I wanted to clarify before you go any further that I did not screw up. For those that are doing the wagers, the guest just was not there. She's a veterinarian, and sometimes when we get veterinarians, they get busy with an emergency and we can't get them on the phone. But I did not screw up, so I'm just clarifying that right now.
Well, and I want to clarify that I just talked to her yesterday and she swore she'd be here. So,
well, you know, she is a veterinarian. And like Glenn said, you know, somebody's pony is probably colicking somewhere. And we're glad she didn't make it for the show for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there we go.
Absolutely.
So did you grow up in a horsey family, Alice? You have horses when you're little kids?
No, I was totally not. My mom grew up on a farm where her father had pigs and cattle and stuff. And they had horses in the field. I have a hard time envisioning that, but you know, she said that they used horses for part of their, plowing and stuff.
Instead of a tractor. Yeah.
Instead of a tractor.
Wow. They were old school.
Yeah. And, my mom's not that old. So, I mean, I think they just didn't have a tractor.
Well, that's what I mean. And by the time your mom came around, the vast majority of farmers, I'm sure, were using tractors for everything, but that's interesting.
Yeah. And then my aunt always had a horse when I was growing up. And so she had, when I was little, she had a horse that was black. She named it Beauty. And then she had a chestnut horse that I knew was Ginger, but it was actually Lady. But I knew it was really Black Beauty and Ginger, of course.
Of course.
Of course. But and so I got to ride whenever I would go visit my grandparents, mm-hmm. which wasn't as often as I would have liked. And in fact, when I was 5 or 6 and my brother would have been 2 years younger, she got a new horse because Beauty had passed away. And I said, you know, we were supposed to get to ride the new horse. It was another black horse. And Eric went first because he was smaller and they were going to put him on and lead him around. It was a hot, hot summer day. And my brother got up there and then he got bucked off.
Uh-oh.
By the by the horse as she led it around. Well, my aunt was wearing shorts, and the horse, she didn't let go of the horse because, you know, for a while.
Oh, no.
And it drug her through the gravel. And so I remember, you know, having, we sat in the kitchen doctoring up her legs, and I fussed and carried on because I didn't get my turn to ride.
Oh, no. How dare you get hurt? I didn't get to ride.
Exactly. Well, and then the horse bucked, you know, and I'd watched it buck my brother off, but I was like, but I didn't get my turn.
I didn't care.
I didn't care.
Just because my little brother can't stay on the pony doesn't mean I can.
Exactly. So, and so then, you know, I'd get chances to ride here and there, but my parents were always pretty anti-horse. In fact, my father has never seen me ride a horse.
Really?
He's wow. almost 82, and he's never watched me ride because he says that the idea of me on horseback terrifies him. And so he doesn't want to hear about it. He doesn't want to see it. He doesn't
Well, considering considering how it went early on, I can understand why.
But yeah, but he doesn't want any part of it. So, and my mom has come around, you know, she's like cross-stitched me some really pretty horsey things in the last few years. And, you know, and she's come around through the years, but it was always just getting to grab a ride here and grab a ride there. I never really got to, I never got to do it when I wanted to. It was just
whenever you
know, and then I had to sneak it. It was kind of like horses were almost as forbidden as motorcycles when I was growing up.
Yeah, there are plenty of families that were anti-motorcycle in the day. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, now, do you remember the first time you got to ride a horse in the snow?
I do remember. It was probably when I lived in Iowa, which was...
Iowa sounds like a place they have good snow.
Yeah. And it was, I took the horse up to the mailbox because when I lived in Iowa, I had this house. We always joke that we had 10 acres that came with a house.
Yep.
Isn't saying much. We've looked at that. I've looked at that on Google Earth since then. And I think that they've torn the house down since then. But there were some times where the snow was thick and I couldn't, the driveway was over half a mile. And so I couldn't get back and forth easily. And so I would hop on my Tennessee Walker Rebel and I would ride him bareback down to the mailbox and back again. But sometimes if I couldn't get him over to the mailbox, then I'd have to get off to actually get the mail. And then I'd have to walk
him back. You'd have to walk him back.
Yeah. He was 16 hands and there was no, you know,
there was no
aboard. I've never been talented at getting on a horse from the ground if it's bareback. So
I have never mastered that skill either. And I'm so envious of people who can, what do they call it? Vault onto a horse.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so envious. I've never been able to do that. I think when I was about 9 and I had an eatsy beatsy little fat pony, I could. But I think by the time I got 2 digits in my age, no, not happening.
Well, we tried to do that as a kid. Oh, you know what? That was actually the first time I tried to ride a horse in the snow as a kid. We were visiting some of my dad's friends, and they had a pony, a pinto pony aptly named Misty.
Oh, cool. And, boy, you're just chock-a-block full of stereotypical names, aren't you?
I didn't name this horse. Okay. And we were trying to ride the horse. The girl that owned the horse had this teeny-weeny little saddle, so we were going to ride bareback, and none of us could get on the horse. I mean, we were 14, 16, you know, somewhere in our teens.
Funny.
And we were like trying to vault on the horse. Like someone, like one of the kids said, well, get a running start. And I vaulted right up to the top. That pony was so good. She just stood there and looked at us like we were crazy.
What are you doing? That's really funny. Well, I was curious about that because on the radiothon, we asked a lot of our guests, what is your favorite horsey memory from Christmas time? And so many of them said the sound of crunching snow under the horse's hooves when you go for a ride in the snow. That seems to be a universally inspiring or calming sound for horse people.
Yeah. I mean, it is, especially like before you were old enough to know that they could get the snow all balled up in their feet and slide
right.
out from
you
under
know
you.
The difference. Now you just worry about it, right?
Exactly. It's like now it's like all the stuff that seems like it ought to be fun just fills you with anxiety because you know all the things that can go
poor
wrong.
Poor Alice. You worry too
Actually,
much.
I don't spend a lot of time thinking about that. I have other friends that do and they remind me that maybe I should be more careful.
Oh, live on the edge, right?
It's right. Live on the edge.
Yeah, well,
you'll live once.
We're living on the edge right now because I think we really do have our guest Linda on the phone.
Awesome. Linda, are you there?
Good morning from California.
Good morning. Did we wake you up?
No, no, no. I had to have coffee before I got on, or else it would be incoherent.
Oh, good. I'm glad we didn't wake you up, because I was worried that that our attempts to reach you a little earlier than I said might have paused. I mean, if it had been me, I'm always sleeping to the very last second, you know, that I can possibly sleep, because you just never know when the next opportunity is.
I had to feed the animals before I got on the phone. Otherwise, I would be bothered the entire time.
Wow. So you've been up a while.
Just an hour. That's okay. Oh,
that's not too bad. Well, this is my first opportunity to speak with you. And I understand that you are in charge of our region, our NATRC convention for the national that's going to be in Reno, Nevada in February. So
yes,
tell me a little bit.
It's the national convention.
Yeah.
Okay.
So tell us a little
bit. It's the national convention. And it's a gathering of all six regions. And we're putting this on in conjunction with the American Endurance Association. So it's really a large gathering of horsemen from different aspects of trail riding. It's a great event. You know, whether you're interested in competing or just trail riding, it's a great place to learn about stuff, see a whole vendor hall full of tack for trail riding, and listen to some great speakers.
So, speaking of the speakers, can you tell me a few of the people that are going to be speaking?
I sure can. We have a great talk by Susan Garlinghouse, which a lot of you know. And it's an interesting one because it says, "But I read it online." So she's going to go over some of the crazy stuff that sounds, you know, pretty convincing and wonderful online. We have Deanna Ginasso. I'm massacring everybody's name. Sorry. She's going to talk about being fit to ride. She does physiology and kinesiology. And she was actually the inventor of the Suzanne Summers Buttmaster machine.
Ah.
So, and she's a former bodybuilder. So, you know, she does a lot of triathlons, marathons, and she'll be talking about getting your body in condition to help your horse along the trail.
Oh, I definitely need that
doctor,
one.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, well. Dr. Jeanette Merrow is speaking on lameness, a lot of prevention and treatment from the trail rider's perspective, you know, what you're going to run into along the way, because every one of us has run into lameness of some sort along the trail. And so this should be a really great topic. The speakers, that's Saturday's speakers. On Friday, we have Dr. Jerry Zabrak, and he's talking about a guide to the endurance body, which also applies to any type of competitive trail. And he's talking about the stresses, you know, that our sport and riding in general puts on your body and ways to stay in peak condition. He's a cardiologist and works for a renowned institute for heart and vascular health. He has a lot of expertise in blood pressure and cholesterol issues, and he also breeds Arabian horses and has 19,000 competitive miles. So it's a great person to talk about putting this all together in relationship to trail riding. We have a discussion on the equine eye by Dr. Mary Lasseline. She's at the University of California, Davis Equine Ophthalmology Services. And I know from first experience, Davis is a great place to go, one of the renowned vet places in California. I actually had a mare years ago with moon blindness and took her there. And so they're a great group to work with. They have lots of experience. And her talk should be very interesting because I think all of us have run into problems with issues, whether it's a piece of hay in the air, eye, or you know, debris blown in the eye, something like that. So this is very pertinent. Dr. Sarah Lejeune is talking about equine integrative sports medicine. She's also at UC Davis, and Dr. Lejeune actually spoke at one of our regional mini conventions a few years back. She's a great person, great speaker. And a lot of our members here in California, Region 1, have taken their horses to her. But she actually is on the surgical staff at University of California, Davis. She believes in integrating a variety of types of treatment, whether it's acupuncture, chiropractic, traditional Western medicine, into, you know, addressing the horse's issues and rehabilitation, things like that. It's a really great talk. She has some really nice, great ideas. And then lastly, we have Robin Foster, PhD, and she's talking about working together in partnership, communicating and understanding the horse-human interactions and how to get your horse to be successful from the human perspective. So covers a great range of topics, and whether you're a competitor or thinking about competing or just wanting to head down the trail on a Sunday morning, these are all pertinent topics for most riders.
Yeah, that sounds great. It sounds like I was listening to all of those, and I know as part of being on the board of NATRC, we have to take turns manning our booth in the vendor hall, and I was going, well, I don't want to miss that one, and I don't want to miss that one, and I don't want to miss that
so it's like, really hard, you know.
Yeah, like trying to figure
people out. If people are interested in learning about competitive trail sport, we also have the member meetings and the breakout meetings, so they can learn a lot, and you know, some people think you can only come to these things if you're a member of the endurance group or the competitive trail NATRC group, and you really don't have to be. I have friends that have gone who are just recreational trail riders on the weekend, and they're amazed at how much they've learned, and it's interesting looking at all the tack and things like that.
It is.
So it's kind of a something for everyone.
So I'm curious how you got volunteered, or how you came to volunteer to be in charge of something this massive, because this is a huge undertaking.
Well, you know, I retired last year, and I think everybody thought I had nothing to do, so they were going to help me out and fill the hole, you know. So here I am, and now it's a full-time job.
So
I'm glad I'm retired, that I can focus on this.
So they felt sorry for you. They worried that you might be bored and lonely.
Yes, beware of your friends, you know, so everybody's really good at finding something for you to do.
Right.
But, you know, it's an interesting thing, and, you know, months ago I had been talking about the convention theme to various riders, and it sort of worked out that they liked the theme, and so I think that's another reason I sort of got more involved with it. When you come up with some ideas, you just kind of get sucked in. What can I say?
Yeah, absolutely. So do you get to ride much too? I mean, are you a competitor as well as a manager, or, you know, what else do you,
Yeah, I was a competitor for about 15 years, and both me and my horse are retired now, and we've moved up to the foothills, and someday in the future I may get another horse. But right now I'm having a lot of fun being involved on the back door of the organization. I help manage one of the rides with Gene Michelli in Mount Diablo area. I've volunteered for a lot of stuff. So I'm still very active, and I love being around the horses and love what the group promotes and the education and the camaraderie, stuff like that. So it's still a lot of fun for me.
That's awesome. And one more question for you is, I know that they mm-hmm. have lots of vendors because it's in conjunction with AERC, and there's going to be like a whole hall full of people selling stuff. Is there a place people can go to look to see what the vendors are going to be, or they just need to check back with on the website, or do you know who some of them are?
Company, Arabian Horse Association. I don't think you want me to read the whole list that I
No, not at all. I just wanted to get a taste for what was available, because, you know, that's one of the best reasons to go to a convention is all the great shopping deals.
Well, there's also a tack swap. And the tax swap is sponsored by AERC. And so you can bring your tack, whatever you sell it for, AERC takes 10%, which is a good deal, and you get the rest. So this is a wonderful venue to, you know, bring your used tack and reach, you know, 400 people that are looking for riding equipment. So good deal.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for talking about the show, of convention. Can you tell us again the dates and the location and how people can find out more about the convention if they want to attend?
I would be happy to. It's at the Grand Sierra Resort in Reno, Nevada, which is a great place. It's a huge complex, has everything there, from movie theaters to bowling alleys, so even your family can come and have a good time. It's February 19th and 20th. And for Region 1, which is California, we have an additional awards breakfast, but the national awards are Saturday night. However, during the day, we have all the speakers. The vendor hall is open. We have a hospitality suite sponsored by NATRC. Everyone's welcome to drop in, say hello, have a munchie and something to drink, and meet the NATRC members. So this should be a lot of fun. And hope to see everyone there. And it's you can look up all the registration information and the speaker details on the NATRC national website, which is natrc.org.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I hope you have a great day.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Perfect. That sounds fascinating. I want to go to Reno.
Well, come to Reno. I'm going to be there.
Dang. That's a lot of fun. Well, Glenn, yay, Glenn, gold stars and sparkles for him, has gotten our other guest on the line. You want to chat with her?
Sure. Our next guest, Kay Gunkel, is a competitor and a veterinary judge for NATRC. And she is also newly elected to the board of directors. In fact, she is also going to be in Reno and we are going to be roommates. So good morning, Kay.
Good morning.
I'm so glad we found you this morning.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your background with NATRC, like how you got started with riding.
Yes, I had a riding instructor when I started riding when I was 8, 9 years old, and she was very active in NATRC and was putting on competitive trail rides in my area. And so when she knew I was a good enough rider, she asked me to come to the first ride. I was the only junior rider there, and I was scared to death what was going to be asked of me, but I was hooked. I had so much fun. The other competitors were so nice to this little junior rider, and I won ribbons and was hooked for the rest of my life. I rode as a junior. My parents hauled me all over the area going to rides, and then I got married and started my own veterinary practice and was away from the sport for several years, but then came back to it, got my judging certificate or card after I graduated from vet school and have been judging, and I just so enjoy it. I went to veterinary school on an NATRC scholarship, which was really cool as well. And I was blessed that my children also got involved in the sport, and it was something that we did together as a family, as going to rides and competing and, learning about horses, because that's one of the things I love so much about competitive trail is that it's such a learning opportunity for learning everything from nutrition to soundness to saddle fit, and then just working one-on-one with your horse.
Right,
I also
exactly.
As a judge, I have been blessed that I've gotten to meet people from all over the country. I had opportunities to judge in all of the regions as well as Alaska. So it's been a wonderful opportunity for me to get to meet and interact with other people that love this sport.
So have you always lived in Colorado? I mean, you said in the area, so I didn't know if that was always in Colorado.
Yes, I grew up in Durango, Colorado in the Southwest, and then now live in Loveland, Colorado, on the northern area of Colorado. So yes, I'm a pretty much a Colorado native.
So I don't know that much about Colorado other than the one time I drove through to go to a competition. Is Durango very hilly too, or is it flatter than where you are now?
No. Okay. Durango's right in the mountains.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've always been in kind of a mountainous part of the country.
Well, so like those of us down here, when we go to a ride that's hilly and rocky, it's a learning curve for us because our horses are used to, you know, what we jokingly will call hills or mountains or nothing compared to, to your hills and mountains. And I'm wondering if you ever face the same challenge, like coming to ride in on the flat, like, is there a difference? Do you see as a judge and a competitor that there's a different style of riding depending on your terrain? And is it hard to adjust?
I don't know if the style of riding is as much different as just the, how much the climate, and I even think the humidity has more of a stressor on the animals, on the horses, because here in Colorado, it's dry and the air's thinner, but our horses are conditioned to that, and then taking them into a flatter state, but there's a much more stress to them on the humidity.
Right, okay.
It definitely becomes a challenge of having your horse fit and ready to go to those, you know, to different areas of the country. And there are definitely competitors that do it a lot, like Ken and Betty Wolgram are a good example of that from Region 3. They compete a lot in the mountainous country, but then they'll take their horses to, you know, the Kansas ride, the Texas ride. So.
Right, because when I've seen them at our rides, like our ride that we have in Decatur, it's a little bit hilly, but it's definitely sandy. It's not rocky, but the but it can be hot. I mean, but you know, and I've always wondered if they had an advantage because their horses are used to the hillier stuff, so they're conditioned to mountains, or if it was harder for them because they're because they weren't used to the humidity. I wondered if one canceled out the other, or you know,
I think the humidity plays a huge stress on the horse's body with their metabolics and hydration. And, you know, Ken and Betty are an example of somebody that's been doing the sport for so many years and really know what their horses need. For a competitor that maybe has competed in one region and then decides, let's try a different ride, that could be a very challenging prospect for them because of just not really knowing what their horses need for a new climate, a new environment.
Well, for example, we saw that at the ride you judged for me last fall. There were a couple competitors that came from Arizona, and obviously their horses were used to the heat, but the one lady's horse was so stressed by the humidity.
I agree.
Which was higher than we expected it to be. So, but I know as a rider, a competitor had asked me to have you expand a little bit on how a rider in flat country can get their horse used to hill, like what they can do to condition for the mountainous terrain when they don't have any mountains.
Mountains. And that's a hard one because, I mean, literally just like with us, when we hike and go hiking in the mountains, it's a stress on our body that we need to condition for. And so, I mean, literally some of it, they need to get out and do some hills. And I know that that's hard when you don't have hills available. I know a lot of folks will come to a ride, you know, even a couple weeks before the ride to try to acclimate to the high altitude. And I think we've really found that once a horse is in condition, that the altitude doesn't affect them as much. But if they're not used to climbing, because those are different muscles that they're engaging and using, then that can be a disadvantage of just getting the horse in shape for that those climbing.
Right. And I know that, like, I'm very lucky now where I live. I have canyons and steep uphills, and I've always wanted to live somewhere where I could practice on the different types of terrain. And now the little ranch where I rent my house has all that stuff available. Riding too, though, like I know, like for example, when you've ridden a flat ride versus your hilly ride, do you find that you are more sore one versus the other, your own body?
Yes. And, you know, cause you know, as we, know that when we go uphill, we want to be up and light and out of the saddle. And so if you haven't been doing a lot of hilly country, you're not used to engaging your own muscles in that way too. So, but some of that can be accomplished by, you know, work with the fitness balls and work at the gym, getting yourself conditioned to being able to move and help your horse down the trail. Because really, on a hilly ride, whether you're going uphill or downhill, you are really never really just sitting in the saddle. That being up and light and helping that horse to engage and to go up the hills and stuff.
So how does the fitness ball help? What can you do with a fitness ball?
There's exercises that can be done, you know, where you're actually sitting on the fitness ball, and then you can actually post, like if you're a person that does a lot of posting, or just even holding that 2-point with the fitness ball in between your legs, building those muscles.
That sounds painful.
With practice, it can definitely can strengthen those muscles and make your ride, less painful at the end of the ride.
Go ahead, sorry.
I just was going to say, with training and conditioning for these hills, you really do just kind of almost have to find some hills, whether it's, you know, a gully that you kind of keep going up and down, so that they're engaging those muscles. We love it here when we can find a trail where it's just long, slow distance. It may take us an hour to get to the top of the hill, but we're just having the horse just literally climb and walk up that hill on a long, slow distance.
Which is why the horses that aren't as in condition want to run up the hills more or trot, because they need the momentum to make the hills, whereas the horses that are in better shape find it easier to walk. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, and just that the muscles are ready to be engaged and used. And yeah, like you said, not having to use the momentum.
So as a judge, this is a curiosity too. When a horse that's used to flatland comes to the mountains to work or to ride, do you find that they tend to rush? Like when you're judging an obstacle that's like an uphill or a downhill, do you see more the horses rushing more, or do they sometimes take more care? Are they more careful because they're, you know what I'm saying? It's because it's not what they're used to. Mm-hmm. How do the horses typically react?
Well, and that's where, as a judge, judging the horses, I watch for that as they're negotiating an uphill. Are they engaging that hind end and really pushing from the rear? Is the rider helping the horse to do that too? And that's what's going to make the difference on the scorecard of, did the horse have a good, an excellent, poor, or it got a rushing because it did engage and jump into the trot or, yes, those are things that I'm going to be specifically looking for as I'm judging a particular obstacle.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for coming on today to talk about the hilly and the rocky and the bad and the good. And hopefully this year we can each experience some different terrain.
And that's why I always, as a judge, encourage people to come and ride in Colorado so they can see this wonderful state, but hopefully come and, you know, just spend some time riding and conditioning in the mountains. Because I think for some that aren't used to riding in the mountains, it can almost be kind of scary, you know, worrying about what animals might be out there and things.
Right.
So it's just great, this NATRC with the family that develops, and people are willing to have people come and stay at their place and show them the trails.
Well, real quick before we go, I know that most of the rides in Colorado happen after the snow. So do you know off the top of your head what rides are happening this spring and summer in Colorado?
Yeah, I mean, there's several. I mean, they start the first of the seasons are in April and May, or down in New Mexico and the deserts of New Mexico. And then June, July is when we'll have more of them up here. I'm actually judging the Colorado Trail ride that's on the Colorado Trail up by Pine, kind of west of Denver.
Oh, cool.
They'll go through September.
Is that in June? Because I know I want to make one of them this year. I just have to figure out which one.
Right. And so, of course, the going on the website to actually I don't want to tell say dates and then have give you the wrong date. So
oh, sure.
To the website.
Absolutely. I was just thinking like which one was in June or which one was in July. But yeah, they can head to the NATRC.org website for the full schedule.
Yes.
All right. Thank you again.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
I'll see you in a few weeks.
Happy trails.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was very interesting. There was some great advice on getting your horse fit for that type of work with whatever terrain you've got. I like that.
Yeah, that's something that we face down here a lot. Cause like we always are saying we want to go to Colorado to ride, but then we get there and it's harder. Well, the one time I went, it was harder on me. My horse was fine, but I had a lot of trouble breathing.
Yeah.
You know, the altitude. And I know people in Denver say they have trouble sometimes. I don't ever notice any trouble when I go to Denver, but the place I rode was up on the Grand Mesa, so it was even higher. Oof. And I was with a girl who was undergoing chemotherapy, and she got really altitude sick.
Well, I bet. So, yeah, it's tough on anybody up there. That's interesting. It's something else that you have to keep in mind, yeah.
Right, but I have read, and I meant to ask Kay this before she left, I have read that the people have a longer time adapting than the horses, that the horses actually do really well if they go in and then leave. That they start to have more trouble about the time the humans acclimate, that the horses then start to acclimate. It's like if the horses just go, it has something to do with the number of red blood cells.
Yes, I was going to say, I think the horses have a higher red blood cell density than humans, don't they?
That's what I believe, yeah. And so they do okay. Like if you drive up for a ride and you're there a week, the horse isn't going to be stressed. But then if you stay a second week, then the horse needs acclimation time.
Interesting. Huh. Well, we're just going to have to get somebody to come on the show and talk about red blood cells in horses.
There you go.
That's it. Next time. Well, it's been a great show, and I've enjoyed it immensely. And thank you, Glenn. You did a good job. I would play the cheer sound file, but you don't have it in Thursday. We're going to fix that. And you can
applause.
Applause. Yeah, we have to play the applause button. And you can find links to today's guests on the website at horsesinthemorning.com. And if you haven't already, follow us on Facebook at Horses in the Morning. And we are also on Twitter. That's Horse Radio is our handle. And you can have all of the shows with you wherever you go. If you haven't done so already, go to your app store for Android or iPhone and download the free app. It's just search for Horse Radio Network. It makes it really easy to use. And if you miss a live show, you can always hear the recorded version because all 1,343 of them are all saved up. So
that's right.
That's right. So we'll see you again next month, Alice.
Yes, I'll be here.
Woohoo!